and welcome back to After Hours. We're here to get up and close and personal with our ECE lecturers. I'm Eva.
And I'm Nuanthi. And for today's episode, we'd like to warmly welcome Kelly Blinko, a senior lecturer in software engineering. So Kelly, can you please tell us a bit more about yourself?
Hi, thanks for having me. So I am a senior lecturer. I've been with the university for just over 4 years, teaching for, you know, 4.5 years at the university now. I'm from the US originally. I married a Kiwi there. That's what brought me over to New Zealand. So I actually moved here while I was still doing my PhD. So I've been in New Zealand for 8 years. I finished up my PhD while I was here. One of my kids was born in New Zealand just before we moved here. So I was, you know, juggling a very young child and finishing my PhD when we first moved here. And then I joined the university just after my second son was born. So that's a little bit about me.
Wow, cool. So it seems a common theme with the lecturers we've been chatting with that they're from the US from this podcast. So what part of New Zealand attracted you here? Well, I suppose it was your husband. And how's your first Kiwi winter treating you?
So I'm from the US. It's technically not my first winter. I've been here for 8 years, but it's my first one that I'm not leaving New Zealand for, at least for some small reprieve of the winter. I'm from Philadelphia originally, so the winter seems certainly not as dramatic as Philadelphia winters, where, you know, it snows and sometimes you're shoveling like a meter of snow on your driveway. So it's certainly not that cold, although the dampness is something that I haven't quite gotten used to. And I'm really fortunate that, you know, I still have family and things in, it's summer in America when it's winter here. So I've often gotten to escape the New Zealand winter, but this will be the first year that I don't get to do that. So let's see how I survive. But I do like the New Zealand winter in one sense. I find that even though it rains a lot, at least once a week, you get a day where it's beautiful and sunny and you can get out. Like today is a really, really lovely day. So I'm hoping to be able to.
Oh my gosh.
That's great. Yeah. Today seems really nice to get out.
Yeah. We can all get out in the sun. It's so, cool.
So before we jump into your accomplishments in your teaching and your research, can we just learn a bit more about why you chose engineering initially and what attracted you to your specialization?
Sure. I don't even think I knew anything about software engineering before I started my degree. My dad was an engineer. He was a mechanical engineer. And so I was always told growing up that I would be a good engineer because I was good at math and science. And I liked to solve problems. Like looking back, I always was trying to solve things in innovative ways. So I think I was well suited to engineering. I was strongly encouraged to do engineering because those were my natural skills as a kid. I remember starting engineering having no idea what specialization I would want to do. Software was like not even in my headspace. I remember being at an induction for engineering, like, you know, when you first start and they bring all the 1,000 people or whatever at University of Auckland. I don't know how many people at my university. But I remember sitting next to two people who were talking about coding and like their favorite programming languages and stuff. And like, I had never done anything of that kind. I was from a small kind of Catholic school in the US where you basically learn like the basics, math, science. Like there was no coding classes. Like I learned to touch type in high school and that's it. So I had no experience before starting, but then, you know, in your first year of engineering, you take kind of a little snippet of all of the different types of engineering. And I just loved the logic of software. The idea that, you know, you could just think of a solution and logically figure out how to put it together into getting the computer to do it. So that's why I ended up specializing in computer engineering, not software, because there was no software engineering when I was in university. But then I learned quite a lot of the electrical and the embedded systems type stuff as well in my degree. But then I ended up getting a job in software engineering after. So I worked in industry for 8 years after getting my degree before coming to New Zealand and taking up this lectureship at the University of Auckland.
Right, cool. Leading on from your lecturing, it looks like how did you get involved in teaching? Because it looks like you've taught all around the world.
I taught, yeah, I mean, I don't know about all around the world, but I was a software engineer, like I said, in industry for 8 years. And one of the things, you know, that really struck me when I was in industry is really how much like the human side of software is so important in the career and how little you get taught that, or at least I got taught that in my education. I'm hoping that my students think otherwise because I try to teach that at the University of Auckland. But yeah, it struck me that like there was just, you know, you learn how to code and you learn how to do some design and stuff, but there was very little in terms of how to actually succeed, because teamwork and communication skills and working in large groups is so fundamental to engineering. And so I kind of had always had this idea that maybe I would go back one day and get a PhD and try to teach some more of that human side of things. And yeah, my husband at some point was like, well, if you said you want to do it, like, just do it. So he encouraged me to go and get my PhD, and I did, and I just continued with that human aspects kind of flavor throughout my PhD, and I've been introducing it more and more in the courses that I teach at the University of Auckland.
Because we checked out your website, and we did notice that your research is predominantly human-centered, and you don't really see that often. Are you planning on continuing that human-centered research, or are you planning on branching out into other areas?
Yeah, I mean, some of my, I call my research human aspects, but it's kind of a socio-technical take on software engineering. So recognizing that, of course, software engineering is a technical activity, like you are still doing technical work, but that the human side of that is really important. So it's important to understand like the problem that you're solving in the place of the users that are having that problem. So it's so easy for people to just think like, this is how I would want the software system to work, and develop a software system that's for them instead of for the users that are actually going to use it. And so that human side of understanding the problems of others is really important. But also, so that's my requirements engineering side, but also the human side of like, how do we work together in large teams? And that's the socio-technical side of it, because you have to understand the software system itself to know how the collaboration can happen. So it's not like you have to collaborate with everyone on the team. You need to collaborate effectively and understand where awareness needs to be. You know, who's working on what and who should I be telling about what I'm doing and all of that. So it's technical as well, because you look at the dependencies of the software, you look at kind of how the software is structured to know what efficient coordination means in a software team.
Right.
Yeah, I'll definitely stay in the human aspects. I think I really like the human aspects, but there is still some technical side of it as well.
Yeah, it sounds like those kind of lessons could be applied to like every part of engineering.
Yeah, I think so. I always give it the software spin because that's where, you know, I have experience.
Yeah. What lesson have you learned in your career that you would want to kind of tell your younger self, you know, that kind of reflecting on your career and being like to your younger self?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably lots of lessons, but probably one, if I guess I have, it would be kind, like to yourself, but also to others. You know, your career is very long. And so like, you don't want to don't feel the pressure that you need to skyrocket to like super high up super fast. Like just be kind and allow yourself the space to grow, but also being kind to others, because if you do want that growth, you know, those networks and the connections are super important. And you know, you want to be remembered for being a kind person, not just for being like the selfish person that made it to the top.
Yeah, that's such a good lesson, I think, especially for nowadays, because when you're in uni, you're always like, oh my gosh, I need to do like the next step or do well in this paper, and I think it's hard to kind of step back and
yeah sometimes I don't relate with some of the students who are so obsessed with getting like the best mark on everything. That was definitely not me in my undergrad. Like, you know, I did well, but being kind to yourself, I think, is so important. Like, you know, is getting an A+ really worth all that extra anxiety that you put on yourself? Like, do a really good job and do the best you can without kind of making yourself super stressed.
Yeah, so I suppose we're kind of like more fun questions. But our first question was, if you're going to have like a me day and take time to de-stress, what would be the three top things you were going to do?
You know, I get like no me days. If I had a me day, like a full me day, it would just be to relax. Like, I never, like, my life is so busy. You know, we have two young kids and my husband and I both work full time. And both of our jobs have been really busy. So it just feels like we're constantly moving from one thing to the next. So yeah, just a chance to relax. Probably I would do, I don't know, like if you want specifics, I'd go to a yoga class. I'd probably go for a walk or run on the beach, depending on how energetic I felt. I'm lucky to live close to the beach, so I can go for walks on the beach quite often. And then, I don't know, sit with a coffee on the beach or something and just, you know, totally do nothing. Just sit and watch the people walk by and enjoy a coffee.
Fair enough.
We also saw that you love to travel and you also got a chance to travel a lot for your work. Is there any place that you visited that's been your favorite so far, or anywhere else that's still on your bucket list?
Yeah, I do love to travel, so it's sad that we won't be traveling anywhere this year. I think Italy has been my favorite place to go. I probably have a soft spot for it because I studied abroad in Italy when I was an undergrad. So I went and did a semester, like, and as I said, I was doing a computer engineering degree. And I studied art in Italy. Oh, wow. I just like went off the grid and did like watercolor painting and art history, and it was like just so relaxing and amazing compared to, you know, an engineering degree. And so I really enjoyed the time there and developed a love for red wine and Italian food. And then I've been lucky enough to be able to go back to Italy quite a few times after that, for personal and for work. I went to an international conference of software engineering in Florence a couple of years ago, and it was just like amazing because I was no longer on a student budget. I was able to let go and actually look around Italy a little bit more as like an adult. And yeah, it was quite magical. I love Italy. Where did you say, where else would I like to go? Yes. So many places. I mean, I've been to a lot of places, but there's so many more. Probably if I had to choose one, I would say Ireland, and I'm hoping that I'll get to go there somewhat soon. I mean, at least, you know, in the next 5 years or so, I'm hoping that I can get to Ireland. My family, like my grandparents, are both all immigrants to America. And my mom's side was Italian, and so I've been to Italy, and I was kind of raised more in the Italian, like, cooking and things, because that's my mom, and she did most of the cooking growing up. My dad's side is from Ireland, and people always give me a hard time, because I've never been to Ireland, and yeah, I think it would be cool to go, and I still have family in both of the countries, so going and seeing some of the family in Ireland would be cool.
Yeah. Now that we're down to level one for now of the COVID alert system, what has been your favorite kind of level one splurge, like, you know, thing to do on level one that level four?
I mean, it didn't take level one, but my favorite thing was my kids going back to school. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like such a, you know, basic thing, but it was really hard work. My husband and I both working from home. And having, like, I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, and so my 8-year-old was really good during lockdown. My 5-year-old was too. I don't want to say that either of them were not good, but my 5-year-old was difficult because he can't read, and so the activities that he was supposed to be doing for school and things, like, he needed, you know, guidance, and it was really difficult to find the time to kind of be a teacher to a 5-year-old while I was trying to do live online lectures of software engineering and, like, not having any interruptions, like putting post-it notes on the door of, like, you're not allowed to come into my office or there's a post-it note on the door. So it just was quite stressful having the kids home all the time. So having them go back to school was really nice, and it just means that now I have a little bit more time to do something for myself, which I think is really important for, you know, everybody, including students, like getting out and going for a walk or taking a yoga class or whatever it is that you like to do, that find time, even if it feels super stressful. You know, like I constantly have deadlines and I'm stressed over things, but you just need to say, like, I need this hour to myself, because otherwise, you know, the stress will just keep building and you won't be as productive as you think you will if you skip that time to yourself. So I can now have time to myself again now that my kids are back at school.
Is
there any book or film that you would recommend to anyone listening?
A specific book or film? I don't know. I read and watch like such an eclectic mix of stuff. And I don't, like, I know I probably should have some like amazing book that like a self-help or something like that. But I'd like to read like complete fiction, like just novels, because yeah, to me reading is like a time of just like zoning out and like putting, like, you know, just taking that time away from my craziness, because I read so much for my job, like software engineering literature and software engineering stuff, which I'm sure I can come up with some great papers for you to read, but maybe won't be the most interesting. So yeah, for me, TV and reading is like a complete fiction, not like any type of learning. It's just like my time to zone out and stop thinking a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's been really good to hear from you, and I like the messages of kind of zoning out and, like, you know, taking time for yourself and that kind of thing. So thanks so much for talking to us.
Sure. Yeah, no worries. And good on you all for putting this together. I know it's a massive amount of work on all of your parts, so thanks for putting in the effort.
Thank you.